Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Nation.
Just like the one.
It's the Savage Nation. Iran just shot down a super secret drone because of the incompetent, corrupt idiots in the administration. The European Union and its banks are on the verge of collapse. Putin is rigging another election. And so therefore I'm playing Christmas music because I want to soothe you. I know most of you don't want to hear anything that might rile you and get you excited. After all, it's the Prozac Nation. That's how we have Obama as president, and that's why Gingrich is rising in the polls. It's because you're drugged out of your mind. And I don't want to upset you, because like women and dogs and cats and men and leprechauns, you get excited and frightened if someone gets angry. I don't want to get angry. I want to keep you soothed and calm and have you shop so the GDP goes up. It's important that you shop. Pay no attention to the fact that the world is burning around Obama. Pay no attention to the fact that the man has set the world alight. So no attention to the fact that everything the man touches falls apart. We see stories that are frightening, such as the leader of China. The leader of China. See, I'm whispering. I'm not angry. I'm not excited. No, don't turn the show off. The head of China urges the Chinese Navy to prepare for combat. And we have the smallest Navy since 1932 under Obama, the military killer. The smallest Navy since 1932. China is on the move. They're building an aircraft carrier. And the leader of China says to the Navy, get ready for combat. And what are we doing? You're not going to believe the rest of this story. We're sending a woman over, Michelle Florney, who is going to negotiate with the Chinese in military-to-military talks. Now, I don't have to tell you how absurd this is. This is an exclusive to the Savage Nation. We're not sending a naval man there with a real combat background. We're sending a woman from the Clinton administration, now deeply embedded in the Obama Defense Department, to Beijing. They're going to laugh at her. The Chinese don't respect women. The Chinese laugh at women. And here we're sending a woman because she's an apparatchik of the Democrat machine, and she's due to meet in Beijing with her Chinese counterparts for military-to-military talks. Doesn't that give you a nice feeling of security? So this is what's going on. The largest military in the world, China's People's Liberation Army, and their Navy are now getting ready for some kind of war posture. But if I tell you more of the story, you're going to get frightened. Because here is one of the dim, moronic admirals, what he has to say. Now, remember what he's responding to. The head of China is saying, get ready for war, to his Navy. Admiral John Kirby says, nobody's looking for a scrap here. Certainly, we wouldn't begrudge any other nation the opportunity, the right to develop naval forces to be ready. No, we wouldn't begrudge them that. This is what we have in the Navy now. Floating brothels. Floating birthing clinics. It's beyond me to believe that this is what this military has become under Obama. But again, it's Christmas time, and I was reading that ratings go up on stations that go to all Christmas music. And so, therefore, I'm reluctant to actually talk about the news. Dare I shock you with any further news, such as a missing drone that went missing in Iran, and I'm still asking, was it on purpose or by accident? Now, our government says it was not shot down, and Iran says they did shoot it down. And so, as I say, being a patriotic Boy Scout, I believe my government. So, therefore, if the Iranians didn't shoot it down, it went down for one of two reasons. Either it had a mechanical failure, or someone in the U.S. Air Force Drone Division purposely sent a Christmas gift, or shall I say a Ramadan gift, to Iran on a silver platter and just landed it softly so they could copy the technology and perhaps share it with Russia, China, North Korea, God knows who. That's story number two. But again, I don't want to shock you or frighten you in any way with any of these stories. We could talk about the old marshmallow and his rise on the fireplace of the Republican Party, Newt the Marshmallow. Newt the Marshmallow, who will guarantee destroy the Republican Party for 50 years, is now on the top of the list, being pushed by the Democrats, of course, the media, of course, and some foolish Republicans who don't understand that although he is creative, although he is admirable in terms of intellect, he will destroy the Republican Party for at least 50 years. Why? Shall I go into the details of who Newt Gingrich actually is? Remember when you used to joke about John Kerry's flip-flops? Well, this man invented the flip-flop. In fact, Newt Gingrich carries his old baggage around while wearing flip-flops so that he can easily flip and flop. And his baggage is so old and so voluminous that his bags don't even have wheels on them. He schleps them through terminals looking for his next contract. Newt schleps his bags through the beltway, seeing if he can pick up, like a whale, in other words, who opens up his big gaping jaw. He sees what kind of plankton can be sucked into his gaping jaw. Newt Gingrich will destroy the Republican Party one way or the other. The Democrats are egging him on. The fake polls are saying he's soaring. And of course, it's probably true he's soaring. And that's because it's only amongst Republicans that he's soaring. Certainly not amongst Savage Nation listeners, I hope, or I would guess. And certainly not amongst independents. No independent in his right mind would ever vote for this broken suitcase. I can't understand how this is happening, other than the fact that that Mitt Romney is a lackluster candidate in plain English. That's story number 15 or 16 or whatever. We got the drone. We got the China's Hue urges Navy to prepare for combat. There are so many other stories, I'm reluctant to give them all to you at once. 1-800-449-8255. Here's one for you. Here's another one to throw into the mix. The newly invented Bill Clinton, who has spent years trying to reinvent himself with millions of dollars in PR to try and make you forget who he actually is tied to Corzine in a giant cover-up. According to an article that came out today, as MF Global collapsed, Clinton's firm was raking in huge fees for reasons nobody understands. Why a Newt Gingrich candidacy would doom the Tea Party. These are articles on michaelsavage.com. I think it's time for another Christmas tune. I think the audience is going to get frightened and search the dial for Christmas songs. How about Nat King Cole, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire, so that I don't have to talk about Newt Gingrich or Mitt Romney or Obamacare or China, or tell you that the far-left governor in California, Moonbeam, wants people to elect to pay more taxes. He wants the wealthiest in California to pay 20% more in state taxes when already we are paying probably the highest state taxes in the world. Yes, in addition to 39% federal taxes, the bankrupt, corrupt state of California charges people at the top 11%. 11%, and old Moonbeam wants 20% more. And so eventually there will be no one left here but illegal aliens and people in the Occupy movement who certainly don't have the ability to pay taxes. Play a Christmas song, and I'll pick it up from there. Go ahead. Come on.
Chestnuts roasting. There you go. That's what they want to hear. Fire.
That's all. That's
give Jack
me a song.
Frost nipping at
That's
your
all.
Nose.
Jack Frost, you got it. Machine guns from the Justice Department killing a Border Patrol agent. Go ahead. Take it away. Play Christmas songs. Go ahead, walk around like a lunatic. Take
and
your Prozac.
Folks dressed up like Eskimo.
Lady Gaga's going to the White House to discuss bullying. The world's on fire. Lady Gaga's invited to the White House to discuss bullying. The European Union and the banks are on the verge of collapse. Putin is rigging another election. North Korea is building a missile capable of reaching the United States with a nuclear weapon. Iran just shot down our most advanced drone. And Lady Gaga is invited to the White House to discuss policy. Go ahead, keep playing the song.
Hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way.
You believe in Santa Claus? You must. If you believe in Obama, you must believe in Santa Claus. Well, let's stop for a minute. In other words, if you grew up believing in Santa Claus and Mickey Mouse, then you must believe that Obama is the most competent, honest president in American history. Now, I didn't grow up believing in Santa Claus or Mickey Mouse. I was a cynic at birth. I did not have a mobile over my crib to play with, nor to look at, to advance my knowledge. In fact, as soon as I could put on a pair of dungarees and go to work, my father put me to work in his store selling used comic books. And I guess I'm a product of that mentality, which is if you want to live, you got to work. If you want to eat, you got to work. Every bite of food I took, my father said, "You're living off the fat of the land." I didn't even know what he was talking about. He was trying to tell me that the food did not grow on a tree. Well, some of it did, but he had to buy it. He used to say to me, "You're living off the fat of the land. You're doing pretty good." I didn't know what he was saying. He was being cynical and sarcastic. I guess he was trying to tell me that he grew up a different way in the old country, and I had it pretty good here in the new country. But soon enough, I would learn what he meant as I went to work at a young age. And so therefore, as I say to you, there are an awful lot of stories to worry the average American with a reasonable amount of intelligence. And that is why I intend to play Christmas songs from now until New Year's Eve in order to soothe you and make certain that you're not going to suffer any kind of heartbreak in any way. China's Hu tells the Chinese Navy to prepare for combat. That should worry you. No, it doesn't worry you at all. Oh, no. No, no, not when we have admirals who say that, "Well, we can understand. We don't begrudge any nation building up its military." See, that's the new sensitive Navy. That's the new Obama Navy, the smallest Navy since 1932, is not concerned about this at all. Not concerned at all. They lost the drone, the most advanced one, over Iran. Doesn't bother them at all. Why doesn't it bother them? They don't even know they lost it. Half of the people in the chain of command don't know they lost it. Leon Panetta flies back and forth to California so often. He doesn't even know if the Defense Department's in Washington or in Monterey, California. It doesn't matter to him. He doesn't know where he is. What drone? 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 Stop droning on. What are you talking, drone? Drone, 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 drone. Stop droning on, Savage, about the drone. It's no big deal. Let's listen to clip 8 right now on the Savage Nation.
What clip I'm 8. Being told by a senior U.S. military source who has knowledge of this incident is that it essentially broke its tether. It lost contact with its handlers. And the way these things are built, they are very stable.
All right, let's stop right. Lost its contact with its handler. Now, that's interesting. Very interesting that our most advanced drone lost contact with the jerk who was sitting there with a computer and a mouse and a keyboard, probably in Tallahassee, playing with it, sending it over Iran, and he lost contact with it. Now, I wonder how he lost contact with it. Have any ideas? Could it be that he purposely lost contact with it because he's a double agent? No. How could that be? We don't have any such people working in our government. That only happened during the distant days of the Cold War. We could never have such people working in the military in an age of diversity, in an age of tolerance, in an age of expansionist tolerance. How could we ever have a double agent? And so let's now go to a little Christmas music because I can sense your tension. I can sense the tension in my audience. I know that you probably need a homeopathic remedy for anxiety or a herbal remedy for anxiety. So instead, we'll give you a dollop of more Christmas music. Let's hear it, Beowulf.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and
this
everyone
is a popular song.
You be of good cheer.
Good God. Maybe I'm too cynical for this business. I don't know. This is what people want to hear?
It's the happy.
Oh, don't bother me. I care what Lady Gaga's doing. And what are they doing in the sports field? That's what matters. And Obama's the greatest president since Lincoln.
Meetings when friends come to call.
And Trump is running a debate. Oh, goody. By the way, Romney turned down Trump. What do you think of that? Question. Was Romney correct saying no, niet, 999 to Trump? I'll be right back.
Feliz Navidad.
Am I live or what? What's going on here? You guys are all on Kool-Aid. What's wrong with what song that is? I don't mind playing this sappy garbage, but my God, I have to listen to it so loud. I'm going to wind up with a migraine. Okay, whatever. You have a Hanukkah song? All I Want for Christmas. There is no such thing as a Hanukkah song, isn't there? Is there anyone ever make a Hanukkah song? You play dreidel, whatever. No one wants to hear that. There's a lot of anti-Semitism now. You can't play it. It's raging. Anti-Semitism is the new norm. Oh, yeah, the liberals have brought about, even though many liberals are Jewish, it's very cool to be anti-Semitic now amongst liberals because, well, they don't know why. It's sort of the Occupy movement. Every Jew, as you know, is worth billions of dollars. So therefore, they're part of the 0.1%. Therefore, it's good to be anti-Semitic. And after all, Israel caused all the problems in the world. Every problem on earth. I mean, Sunni killing Shia, Shia killing Sunni, going back to the 12th century. That's the fault of Israel. Yes, I mean, just analyze it from the point of view of a moron who went to Harvard or even better yet to Stanford. Even though the Shia have been slaughtering the Sunnis and the Sunnis slaughtering the Shia ever since these sects originated, about 800 years ago, it was Israel's fault that the Shia are killing the Sunni and the Sunni are killing the Shia. Yeah, just ask anyone in any of the Occupy movements because they know everything, don't they? They know everything. Heartbreak awaits Republicans who love Gingrich, says Ranish Nanunu. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to mock his name. I can't remember it. It's a hard name. He's a very intelligent man. So I read that article, Heartbreak Awaits Republicans Who Love Gingrich, and there's an incredible comment in the article by a listener, whose name a reader, and he says, Newt Gingrich supported the individual mandate considered by conservatives and Tea Party folks to be unconstitutional. Fortunately, he's had plenty of time to come back to his senses on that issue, since that was all way back in 2011. Gingrich also sat on the couch with Nancy Pelosi clear back in his young, naive days, 2008, and lobbied for global warming policy. He called it a mistake. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He was only 65 years old.
Savage.
Hi, everybody. Hello, it's Uncle Michael. We're listening only to Christmas music because we don't want to frighten you. We don't want to scare you. Pay attention only to the what's going on in Hollywood or on a sports field. We're not going to talk about the missing drone shot down by Iranians or given to them on a silver platter. Notice I'm talking quietly. I'm trying to soothe you into understanding the danger we are in with this tyrannical administration. I'm trying to alert you to the fact that Gingrich is rising only because the Democrat establishment wants him to. Otherwise, there's no explanation for this marshmallow to have risen so high so quickly. I play the music. They're not hearing. No one listens to me. Otherwise, no one listens anymore. It's a new thing in the world. It's like a new world order. No one listens to the next man. I don't know how talk radio survives because I'll tell you why. I mean, my ratings are high. I can tell you how I know. The sales of my books were great, and it's based only on this show, so let's start with that. So therefore, someone's listening to the show. Allegedly, it's the third most important radio show in America, 8 to 10 million listeners. My website's booming. I know that. So therefore, people are listening to the show. But I found in real life as opposed to radio life, no one listens to anybody. No matter what you say to them, they don't hear you. It goes in one ear out. It doesn't even go in the ear. I don't know why, sociologically, why this is happening. I don't know whether people are drugged or they're online too much or they're narcissistic to a degree we've never comprehended. The human race cannot survive this, by the way. The human race cannot survive much longer when man does not listen to his fellow man. Because without a dialogue, there could be nothing. It's impossible. Where's the communication? A bunch of schmucks sitting around hitting a key day and night playing... You know, did you see the article that most people under 30 waste their time on the internet? They do nothing but communicate idiotically with each other over nothing. Romney snubs Donald Trump in Republican debate. Now, that's a big story. Romney finally did the right thing. For Romney now, he couldn't have won in that debate with that pompous blowhard Gingrich. Gingrich is a heck of a smart fella, and Gingrich is a heck of a smart debater. But that does not make for a president, number one. Number two, he can't win against Obama. That's a given. I mean, there's a slight chance that the flip-flop of Romney could win against Obama, which is a mixed bag, but it would be better in the sense that, A, I know where Romney was born because his father was definitely a governor of Michigan. He was not born in either Indonesia or Kenya. That's A. B, he has a wonderful family story to tell, and anyone who raises fine children is a good person. Incidentally, by the way, that's a heck of a story there. It's a great one. Does Gingrich have children? Does he? Does Gingrich have a daughter somewhere that we don't know about, like that he's hiding somewhere in a trailer in Tennessee that's going to, when Hillary is going to release the tale? I mean, I'm sorry. I don't know if I'm stepping on. No, Beowulf does. I don't know. I'm groping here. No, Trump. So in other words, all that sex and no children for Newt Gingrich. All that sex and no children. Can you imagine? That's not presidential material. I'm sorry. The average person doesn't trust a man who's had all that sex and no children. So anyone who thinks that Gingrich surging amongst the hardline Republicans is going to win against Obama is a total and complete fool. And he's such a flip-flopper, as I said to you. It's unbelievable to me. The man goes in and out of every subject. And as I say, he is definitely a man who is not a lifelong politician. He only came to Washington almost 40 years ago. No, he's not an insider. He's not inside the Beltway. He is the Beltway. In fact, if you look at his waist, you know he's the Beltway. And he's definitely an outsider. He's certainly not a member of the establishment. He's only been there 40 years. And the only reason he's not an insider is because he spent four decades either as a lobbyist or as a politician. Now, of course, Freddie Mac paid him $1.6 million to be a historian, he said. And that's, of course, absolutely true because, you know, you can check his character and find out to be true. It wasn't because he was trying to sell anything. And he's certainly honest on many, many other issues. But the fact of the matter is he cannot win. So as someone has written, Zachary Pitts, he's John McCain with more hair and a bigger belly. And he said, with all that in mind, let's pretend this is a two-person race, as it appears to be. Let's say Gingrich and Romney are equal on policy in terms of their conservatism and changing stances. Romney appears to have zero personal baggage. He has proven he can raise money, which you will need a lot of, to have a prayer of beating the Obama machine. Romney is not a D.C. lifer. He has serious real-world business success experience. And let's not forget that the economy is the number one issue. Romney made a fortune buying failing businesses, cutting the fat and making them profitable. Now, I want to just say something right here. This is something you're not going to except, but running a business is not the same as running a government. I once wrote that we should run the government like a business, but I've since come to understand that the two are different. You cannot run a government like a business, incidentally. Nevertheless, we'll move into that subject at another time. Fortunately, he won the governorship in ultra-liberal Massachusetts, home of Ted Kennedy and John Kerry. He seems to be popular among independents. He is the only GOP candidate to lead Obama multiple times in the Rasmussen poll. He is the only man the Democrats fear because they know he could technically or theoretically rather win against Obama. Now, that is why the Democrats and the false Republicans are jumping on the Gingrich bandwagon and why he is being hailed as the conservative choice, because they want to neutralize Romney now. They neutralized Cain, and he certainly helped them do it, so he's out of the picture. Now you see that Romney snubs Trump in a Republican debate, which is a very interesting position, because you'd think that Romney was wishy-washy and that he would go along with Trump's trying to trump everyone by running the debate, but he's not going to do it. So who's left? Who's going to be at the debate? Gingrich versus who? Santorum or Amway? Ann Way? What's her name? Ann Way. I call her Ann Way. No derogatory anything meant there. So there's going to be no one at the thing except Santorum. Even Ron Paul has turned it down. Even nutty Ron Paul has turned down the debate with Donald Trump. So who's left? It's nobody but Gingrich and the failed candidates. It's astounding. So there it is. That's the story. That's why yesterday I was talking about the drone and freeloaders in your life, because boy, oh boy, I thought I had met leeches and freeloaders. Man, oh man. Woo. I'm not going to mention names, of course. You'll never hear from me. I never met anyone like this in my life. And so I asked you, who's the biggest moocher you ever had in your family? And what's the worst Muchihara story? I don't mean just giving money to a relative. That's fairly common. I'm talking about giving and not getting anything back. I mean, it's like the gift that keeps on giving, which is you. You keep giving and they give nothing back, not even a thank you. It's like they expect it. How does that work? This is what I mean about the breakdown in society. I don't know whether it's a product of our generation, meaning the time, rather. It's not my generation. It was drilled into me to say thank you, excuse me, be polite. And if someone did something for me, I went out of my way to say thank you, acknowledge it. If I went to dinner, I brought a gift. I never showed up at anyone's house for dinner, whether it was a bottle of wine, a cake, a bread, something. I never saw anything like this. People show up, they bring nothing. Like pigs. They show up, eat, and they look in your refrigerator. More, 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 goodbye. They don't even say goodbye. They walk out. Now, maybe it's a product of the individuals I know. I don't know, but I've never seen anything like it. No one says thank you if you pick up a check. They expect it. Oh, you're a radio host. You have money. Therefore, you should buy the meal. Why should I buy the meal? Why? Let me ask you something. Should I necessarily pay for someone's meal? Well, I can, and I do all the time. I don't let anyone pay for my meal ever, ever. But that's not the same as not saying thank you, okay? So we come back again to the age we're living in, and here's the age we're living in. A, no one listens to anyone. B, no one says thank you. C, no one is polite. D, everyone has a chip on their shoulder. E, everyone resents everyone else. Go down, you know, do A to Z. I don't know. Let's play Christmas music because I can see already the audience is going to get nervous. The women already turned the show off. They're already scanning a dial. That's better. That's what they want to hear. Shop, 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 shop. Yeah. That's the American voter right there. There's the sound of the American voter. If every one of you, see, if you behaved like Frosty, it'd be a better country. And two eyes made out of coal. Frosty the Snowman is a fairy tale, they say. He was made of snow, but the children know. No, truthfully, if everyone was just nice in America, if we all got along and just let them raise taxes on the rich to 100% of what they earned, and completely deconstructed our military since we don't need it anymore, because after all, China may be building the military at a rate faster than Japan was in the 30s. That doesn't mean they have any designs on us. And just because North Korea is racing to build a missile capable of reaching the West Coast, why should that bother you when we have such a third world friendly man in the White House? I mean, we have a man who has catered to the third world ever since he's come into the White House, and look what it's gotten us, isn't it? And take a look at how good he's doing in the war on terror. He doesn't even agree there is one. In fact, 2 weeks ago, the New York Police Department had to arrest a Muslim who was putting together pipe bombs, while the FBI declined, saying it wasn't really a threat because there were no dead people yet. They were busy looking for, I don't know who they were looking for. Newt Gingrich comments on why he's going to be, and that's why you can get a fraud like Newt Gingrich rising in the polls. Correction, Newt Gingrich has two daughters from his first marriage. You see, I told you that. How come they're never seen anywhere in the campaign? No, I knew he had to have some children. I mean, come on, that's why I was groping. I didn't say it definitively. Now, I feel better knowing that he accidentally had, I mean, that he had two daughters with all of that sex. I mean, it's good to know he had two daughters from his early years with one of his wives that he left before they were sick. And why do you think Newt Gingrich is being promoted? Answer, because he's unelectable. Let me put it to you this way, and then we'll go back to Christmas music because I don't want to offend you in any way. I'm going to put it to you this way. The average American voter, here is the average American voter. They're approximately 24 years of age. They were educated in the public schools, which means their brains were drilled with communist and socialist philosophy. They've been drilled to hate white men. Even if they're white, they hate white men even more. They're drilled to think that people of color are superior in every way, no matter what they may do. They do not believe not only in American exceptionalism, they believe America should disappear altogether and be rolled into a deck of cards controlled by George Soros in the Piper's hat. And so, therefore, they don't really pay much attention to policies. They just know that they have a choice now between an old, fat, tired white man with a big stomach and a good-looking young black man who's quite glib. Let me ask you who they're going to vote for. That's the end of the election. Now, let's put it another way. To take the same average voter, a 24-year-old female who reads the gossip columns and spends 30% of her waking moments on Twitter telling people about the nails she just had done and whatever she ate for lunch, a yogurt or whatever they eat, I don't know. Now she's going to go to the polls and really do something for America to make it a better world. Now she sees a glib, good-looking black man versus a glib, good-looking white man who is taller and seems more friendly. Now we have a chance that Romney could win. Now, of course, there's good and bad news in that. The good news is that Romney could win and we get rid of the tyrant. The bad news is that Romney is a is an unreliable conservative, and no doubt he will bring bigger government to an already oversized government and higher taxes. So therefore, what's the difference if it's Obama or Romney? And I'm going to answer that question for you. There is a difference. Because I would sleep better at night knowing Romney is commander-in-chief. I don't know how else to put it. I break everything down on about two levels. Where does the candidate stand with regard to defending my nation against the monsters in this world? Where does the candidate stand with regard to family values, really family values? There, Romney gets 100 and Obama gets a zero. So therefore, I would take him just on those two points alone. That's all there is to it. I'm not going to expect him to be 100% or even 80%. And already he's showing signs of intelligence by turning down the Trump debate. Not because I have anything against Donald Trump. No, don't get me wrong. Donald Trump is a fine man. In fact, I was just in Mar-a-Lago over the weekend and had a very nice lunch there. I didn't see Donald, of course. He was busy talking to the candidates of esteem, such as Rich Santorum or whoever. I don't know. But no, it's not that I know him. I mean, he's a perfectly fine human being, but he runs a very nice club, very good lettuce. The lettuce is good. The salads are good. Clean as a whistle, not a piece of crystal. Everything was beautiful. And if a man could run a club like that, he's got to be a good man, a good business. But the question is, what business does he have running a debate? Why Donald Trump running a debate? I don't understand that. Now, you could say, why don't you run the debate? What if I tell you that I've been asked to moderate a debate, and I told the individual, who's quite prominent, by the way, don't do it because they won't show up, because I know better. I mean, I tell you, I could run a good debate. I said I'd even submit the questions in advance. They wouldn't be that much of a trick question. They wouldn't be that harsh. But you know and I know, none of the candidates, perhaps with the exception of Abby Hoffman, would show up for such a debate. And Abby Hoffman, as you well know, is in the next world. So therefore, it would be a debate with me as the moderator and nobody on the stage. I mean, they'd only show up to a debate moderated by some quizzling like a Wolf Blitzer, who's absolutely reliable enough to bring about a communist revolution without showing it, that slimy little thing, that creature, that worm, that lizard, that amphibian. Don't get me started on these people in the media. So therefore, I said to you, yes, I certainly know more about it than you might imagine. I mean, I wrote some pretty good books, and I have some pretty strong opinions on borders, language, and culture, and I would be great as a moderator. But the fact of the matter is they wouldn't show up, so why even bother, is what I said to the individual ask me, would you moderate a presidential debate? But that brings us about to why should Trump moderate a debate? What has Donald Trump done that would indicate he should be taken seriously as a moderator? That's the real question. The answer is, I'm sorry, not very good. The comments wouldn't be very good on that. Don't even call me on it. And that's why Romney said no today, just said no. Key Republican president candidate Mitt Romney said Tuesday he will not take part in a debate moderated by real estate mogul and reality television star Donald Trump later this month. Well, so who's left? You got the Beltway bandit, I mean the Beltway marshmallow, Newt Gingrich, and he's going to debate who? Ann Way, I affectionately call whatever, what's her name, Babe, her real name? Michelle Bachmann, I call Ann Way. I gave her a fictional name, Ann Way. If I put her into a novel, she'd be known as Ann Way, because she reminds me of an Ann Way salesman. I have nothing against Ann Way, by the way, but the fact is that, so in other words, it's going to be the Beltway bandit versus the IRS agent, and in the background there'll be somebody no one ever heard of, Rick Sanitarium, who's the perennial non-candidate. I'll be right back. Savage. Brenda Lee, why is she singing in a falsetto? She's a woman. I don't understand that. A man could sing in falsetto, but when a woman sings in falsetto, well, it's sort of like, okay, I can't do that. I was going to say Chad. Okay, forget about it. Chad. I was going to say Chad. Chad. Remember Chad in the year 2000? Chad. You got to listen to this soundbite. Here's clip 22 of Obama, the most cynical president in history when it comes to religion. Listen to this. He lit the tree. 22, 22,
more than 22. 2,000 years ago, a child was born to two faithful travelers who could find rest only in a stable among the cattle and the sheep. But this was not just any child. Christ's birth made the angels rejoice and attracted shepherds and kings from afar. He was a manifestation of God's love for us. And he grew up to become a leader with a servant's heart who taught us a message as simple as it is powerful. We should love God and love our neighbor as ourselves.
Allahu Akbar.
That teaching has come to encircle the globe.
It
has endured for generations. And today it lies at the heart of my Christian faith and that of millions of Americans.
Shalom Aleichem.
No matter who we are, where we come from, or how we worship,
it's
a message
already
that can unite all.
They all do. All right, it's enough already, please. Who writes this? Who in the world writes this? I mean, I don't know who believes it. There's some imaginary old Christian lady that controls the elections, living in a trailer somewhere in the heart of Omaha, that they all think they're talking to. It's us that they're talking to. Anyone listening to this believe a word of that? Meaning the way he read it, I mean. Why do they continue this postcard stuff? Talk to me about the economy that you wrecked. Talk to me about the military that you've destroyed. Talk to me about the fact that you've denigrated America's image in the world. Talk to me about the things that matter, borders, language, and culture. Stop talking about, you know, Hallmark card views of things, I would say to myself. All right, whatever. 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 Why don't people listen to anyone else? I'm very honored that I have a radio show because I know people listen to me. But in real life, once the microphone goes dead, it's me and the dog. By the way, he's better today. He is coughing occasionally, but with chicken soup, love, cheese, hugging him, waking up with him, he's much better. Not cured, but better.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Donald Trump is a great showman. He's also a great businessman. If we're trying to figure out how to create jobs, I think one of the differences between my party and the other party is we actually go to people who know how to create jobs to figure out how to create jobs. And so when I was asked whether or not I'd be willing to be in that kind of debate, I automatically said yes.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year. I don't know if there'll be snow. But have a cup
well, you know, well, Newt Gingrich could play Lord of the Fries after the election is over. He could have a special part in the new movie, Lord of the Fries. Let's not talk about the drone that went down over Iran and whether there was a double agent or an incompetent moron who permitted this to happen. Let's not talk about the fact that the euro is about to collapse along with the banks. Let's not talk about the fact that Putin is about to rig another election and there are riots in Russia. Let's not talk about the fact that Shia are killing Sunnis again and Sunnis are killing Shia again. Let's just talk about the marshmallow, the friendly old marshmallow who has reinvented himself named Newt Gingrich. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Of course, the big news is that Romney has just announced that he is withdrawing from the Trump debate. I wanted to shock you a little. I had to do a little delivery. Romney has just made an announcement, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation. We bring this news to you right now. Mitt Romney has just announced he is withdrawing from the Trump debate. Well, I got your attention, didn't I? I mean, was it a good thing or a bad thing for him to say no? It's an interesting, it's actually a news story because there's no one left now in the debate that Trump is going to moderate except the old marshmallow, the inside the beltway, man, Newt Gingrich, who invented the word flip-flop. In fact, as I said to you before, he was flip-flopping before Kerry even wore flip-flops. This guy has flip-flopped on almost everything. I'm not a fan of Newt Gingrich. He's a bright guy, yes. He's got some good ideas on both sides of the aisle. I'll give him that. And he did sit on a couch with Nancy Pelosi a long time ago, back in 2008, lobbying for global warming, saying it was a mistake because he was young. And, yeah, there's a lot of other things. He debated with John Kerry, where he said we need to move towards the most effective possible steps to reduce carbon emissions. He then called for green conservatism. He then said he wants the U.S. government to pay for the incentive to reduce carbon emissions. He also said we should consider amnesty for illegals a few weeks ago. He then said he likes the DREAM Act that gives illegals a chance to serve in our military for citizenship. So he has many very good ideas that could easily fit into a Democrat as well as a Republican, which means he's a man for all seasons, which is why he's surging amongst Republicans who stand for nothing. In other words, if the Republicans were conservatives, they wouldn't be Republicans. They'd be conservatives, and they would have gotten rid of the rubbish in the old party. So it's a perfect place for Newt Gingrich, the outsider, who's really an insider. He's an outsider to Washington because he's only been there 40 years. And he wasn't a lobbyist. He was a historian to Freddie Mac. That's why they paid him $1.6 million, because they needed a historian, not a lobbyist. You understand how that works? I mean, they could never find a historian at a better price than that. They paid him $1.6 million to be a historian for the most corrupt government loan program in history, Freddie Mac, right? Now, you'd think that they could find a historian for $40,000, but they found one for $1.6 million as a historian. You understand that? That's all. And his think tank is only taken in $37 million. That's not lobbying. That's because he's such a great thinker. And he's a wonderful candidate. He's perfect for our times. Perfect, perfect, perfect for our times. Well, what do you think? What do you think? And I'll tell you exactly why Gingrich is surging. It's because weasels like Wolf Blitzer wanted to surge. It's because it's the wildest dream of the Democrat machine to see this man, this lobbyist, this insider, this unelectable man, surging against Romney, who, although Romney is quite liberal in so many areas, is certainly a more palatable candidate for the presidency than Newt Gingrich in so many ways. It doesn't mean that I approve of 50% or 60% of Romney's votes. What can I do? That's him, not me. Who am I to tell him I don't approve of him? I'm just a talk show host. I mean, he's a politician, so he knows how the game works. He knows how to act the act, talk the talk, and walk the walk. I don't. All I know how to do is analyze things and give you one man's opinion. You know, that's what it comes down to. It's one man with one opinion. I'm sitting here at a microphone now in California giving you one man's opinion. I'm simply sounding off from the heartland, but there is no heartland. Where's the heartland? Are you going to tell me that Iowa? So I have nothing against the folks from Iowa, but I could never understand, even when I was a kid in New York, and now that I'm a man in California, why in the heck a group of obese people in Iowa determine who the next president's going to be? I still don't understand how that works. That's like from 1846. Iowa was an important bellwether of what's coming. Hasn't anyone seen the demographics have changed a little bit from fat old white people in Iowa? What in the world are they thinking? Why Iowa? Why not hold it in San Francisco or San Diego? Why Iowa? Can anyone explain to me why people pay any attention to this rubbish of polls in Iowa? It has nothing to do with anything. Nothing. It's not predictive at all. Nothing. Zero. It's of no value. And yet, the country gets crazy involved with it. I don't understand it. So I'm sitting here in the room alone in San Francisco with my dog, who has been quite ill, which is why I came back from Florida. I heard he had a kennel cough. I never heard of such a thing. I rushed home, really. I was planning on coming home, but like I did rush. I got scared because I lost a dog years ago when I stayed away too long, and he had an emotional. I know they die when they... Pets are very sensitive. They're more sensitive than people because they can't rationalize. You can't BS a pet, in other words. You can't call them up or tweet them. You can't tweet your pet and say, don't worry, I'll be home soon. Go to the bank and have a good time. No, you can't do that. They know if you're not there to hear your voice, to smell your socks, to feed them, whatever, they feel heartbroken, like they've been ditched and they want to die. They're very emotional that way. You can't BS a pet. There's no way around it, which is why we still love them, of course. You can't tweet your way out of a relationship with a pet. They're not like men or women. You can't fake it out with them. So I was gone 10 days, so he figured he was ditched already. The person that took care of him is a wonderful person, but he thought already it was a ditch job. So he started to pine away, and he got kennel cough. You know, I came home, it was like a man, you know, with emphysema. It's like a guy was in my bed with emphysema last night. I didn't know where I was. I would wake up like in a... So, but no, I got him better. And I gave him all of his favorite foods. Today he only coughed once. Every time he'd cough, I was like a father again with a young child. I'd wake up. I'd say, I couldn't see where he was in the dark. I looked around. He always moves around. He's got me. He tricks me out first. He's by my foot, then the other foot, then the head. Then he's, Teddy, where are you? And I reach him. I touch him. And I say, calm down. You'll be okay. It's fine. And he's not coughed today. One little cough. Why? I gave him cheese. I gave him roast beef. I gave him chicken soup on top of vegetables. In other words, I fed him the way I would a person who's sick, with my variety of foods rather than a book. I know more about food than anybody on the planet in terms of health. I actually do. How can I make a statement like that? A, it's true. B, I was writing books about health in 1972 before you were even born. You, the experts in San Francisco who were sitting in a tent somewhere in the street. Before you were born, I was writing books on nutrition and health. I'm very confident about the fact that I know that certain foods do work for diseases, and I apply them to a dog as well. Anyway, so there I am. This is the man you're listening to. And here's how I see the world. I see the world in the worst shape I've ever seen it in my entire life, because we have a petty tyrant in the White House who is demonic in his desire to gain control over our lives from cradle to grave. This is this man's dream. Destroy states' rights, increase the grip of federal power over everyone's life from cradle to grave, tax the people who are the most productive and should be most admired by first vilifying them. This is an astounding thing that this man has done. He has brought all of the protocols of communism right to the forefront, and you don't even know it because you've been so brainwashed and you're so drugged and you're so gulled that you don't even understand that by saying you should hate the rich, you should hate the successful, you should tax the rich and tax the successful and vilify them. It's right out of Karl Marx. But you don't even know it. You're so stupid. The American people are so stupid. They don't even know that you're living with a naked Marxist in the White House. A tyrant that if he wins 4 more years, I can say kiss freedom goodbye. Kiss freedom in America goodbye. There'll be nothing left. If that gang grabs power 4 more years, kiss America goodbye. And let me tell you something else, since you're listening now, because I told you a dog story. Gingrich is part of that plan. You heard me. You heard me clearly. That fat old marshmallow is part of the plan. I'll be right back. If you don't like it, I'm sorry. Well, no, hold it. Don't go to a break. The women got scared. Let me stop now. I spoke too loud. They get scared. It's like loud noises. The dogs, not good. Quiet. The men don't like it either. They're all on Prozac now, and they're all Johnny Happies. Golfing, tennis, vacation, presents. Wait, let me play Christmas music. Make them happy. That's it. Something soothing now. This is popular. I don't like John Lennon. I never want to hear him. I didn't like him when I was young. I don't like him when I'm old. I never want to hear John Lennon. Never liked him. Never thought he had talent. How do you like that for blasphemy? Who's this? This is like a... Okay, Bing. I know it's Bing. This is Mitt Romney. This is Mitt Romney in his early days as Bing Crosby. You know that Bing Crosby was Mitt Romney's father-in-law? This is an interesting thing. Wait, play it for a minute. I want to think. He's too slow, a little fast. Can you speed up the record anyway? Is there a machine you have, like a trick machine? God, wow. This is like sniffing a medication. It's like a horse tranquilizer listening to this guy. Oh, 1946 it is. All right, stop for a minute. When you see Mitt Romney, don't you think of Bing Crosby, Christmas, presents, happy, Kate in The Godfather, happy people in living rooms? Yes. When you see Obama, what comes to mind when you think of Christmas? I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. No, I better calm down. I forgot it's the Christmas music that sells. That's right. I read this morning that more and more stations are moving away from anything at all. No talk, no heavy metal, no rock, no music at all. Just Christmas tunes. And their ratings are soaring, which shows you why we have the candidates that we have running for office. I don't know how much longer there's going to even be an intellect to discuss it all in America. Does it exist? Is there anyone out there? Hello, I know you're listening. I know the audience is there. The books sell. I don't even know how many people are out there in America who even think. Do they think anymore? Does anyone listen to what I'm saying? Someone must be reading the websites, not just mine, the others, and worrying about China and worrying about Obama and worrying about the man's tyrannical behavior and worrying about his grabbing power and worrying about the candidates that don't exist. All right, Pittsburgh Betty, welcome to the Savage Nation from PGB 104.7 on the FM dial. Hi, Betty.
Hi. What you say hurts me, Michael. I was listening to Christmas music. It's a good segue because I was listening, and all of a sudden, your voice came on. And what you say is so true. You said, women, tune out. But I was thinking, I was driving home, and I was thinking how sweet everything was. And what you say hurts me. And I tune you out about every 3 months because my husband listens to you nightly. And I say, I can't do it anymore. He makes me feel bad. And I come back because you speak the truth. That's all I have to say.
Well, what do you want me? I see. Now, here's the problem. I'm like the uncle that everyone hates and loves at the same time. What should I do? Bring you good news? I don't know how to do it. I mean, I'm trying to awaken America. So if Paul Revere were alive today, Chaz Napolitano would arrest him as an agitator?
Yes.
So Paul Revere came running down the street riding whatever, a Harley instead of a horse, saying the Chinese are coming, the Chinese are coming. Janet Napolitano would open up an investigation to see why he's agitating the people, disturbing their Christmas shopping.
I don't.
You know what I mean? I'm trying to be overly, you know, simplistic and sarcastic. And I hear in your voice, you don't know what to do. You're conflicted. But you were listening to me for the Christmas music or because you knew it was me?
Oh, no. I was, like, flicking around in the channels. My husband
was... Oh, so it did pick you up on the Christmas music. They're right, then. The Christmas music does work. Yep. How do you like that? Okay, thanks, Betty. That's very... Okay, guys, please, quick, play Christmas music. We don't want to lose any more women. Quick, anything. Hey, everyone out there, it's Michael Savage. It's Christmas time. Go out there and shop. Go and shop till you drop. Make that economy soar for Obama. Get in those stores and make the economy soar for Obama. It's a good world. It's a great world. It's the best world. It's the only world. It's the Obama world. It's Christmas time. Don't pay any attention to those nearsayers, bad talkers. Don't listen to any bad news. It's all made up by those right-wing maniacs. Listen to only good things, happy things, good things, happy things. Hypnopodia. Hypnopodia. Don't you feel better? Don't you get a nice glow? Just Christmas music, no more. No more talk about politics and the economy and war and murder. No, live in that dream world, that bubble of the dream world that the government media complex has in store for you. And anyone who tells you otherwise is, well, they should be investigated by Chaz Napolitano. There's no question about it. I mean, because they mean evil for America. There's truth itself, actually, should be questioned. The whole concept of truth, if you analyze it, was started probably by Jesus, and look what happened to him. No, I mean, you think about it. If Jesus were alive today, don't you think that the TSA would have they'd open up an investigation on him, they'd file on him in the FBI. All right, who's this guy, Nazareth? Let's get a file out on him, will you please?
Savage.
On the first day of Christmas, my true love sent to me a partridge in a pear tree.
On the second day of Christmas, my true love sent to me two turtle doves.
Hi, everybody.
And a partridge.
Hi, it's Christmas time. Ding-a-ling-a-ling.
Christmas, my true love
sent to me. You feeling better now? Calm. No China, no Iran, no Russia. They don't even exist. On the new Savage Nation, China doesn't exist, Russia doesn't exist, Iran doesn't exist, Israel doesn't exist, Palestinians don't exist, Egypt doesn't exist, George Soros doesn't exist. There's no problem. There's no election. It's so far away, why even think about it? I mean, think about the election a day or two before and then, oh, go with your gut. You know, if it feels good, vote for it. You know what I'm saying? Why give it any thought? It doesn't matter anyway. I mean, they're all the same. As I say, don't pay any attention. That's just media hype. There's no difference between Obama and, let's say, Romney. I mean, they're all born in the same place. They all stand for the same thing. And it's all rubbish to think that there's a difference in anybody. And so pay no attention to anything. Just Christmas, Christmas. And so what I'd like to do for you now on the Savage Nation is give you some advice on holiday parties. Michael Savage's 10 do's and 10 don'ts for employees to make certain that you're in a good state of mind. Don't skip the party. Decide if you will drink ahead of time. Do dress appropriately. Don't overconsume anything. You may make a fool of yourself. Please make proper intros at your office party. If you're bringing a date or a spouse, make certain you're polite. Don't talk gossip, politics, religion at any of your office parties. Do not say Obama. Do not say anything about Obama. Put away your phone, for God's sakes. Be a good girl and do say thank you. And if you're real smart at your next office party, bring the boss a gift. It's like bringing an apple for a teacher when you were a kid. And that's Michael Savage's helpful hints for the holiday parties. Now back to Christmas music on the show. Avoiding at all costs politics.
I'm a little Christmas cracker hanging on a Christmas tree. Just a little Christmas cracker.
Believe it or not, this was Newt Gingrich as a child. He was a child star. Before he was a lobbyist, he was a singer. Okay, we had our fun. So I'm in a difficult situation. You talk about the razor's edge. I know what I have to do to maintain an audience's listening habits, and it's probably the hardest act in the whole world. I mean, an actor has it easy compared to me. I have a friend who's in the movie business. He's a very conservative man, by the way. When you say movie business, you think flaming communist degenerate. He's a very conservative man, wonderful guy. And he said to me, he knew Lee Strasberg, who said to him, anyone with an IQ over 80 can be a good actor. There's no such thing as a good actor. Why do you think there's so many reality television shows? Because they're not acting. They are who they are. And with the invention of the Lee Strasberg School of Acting, there's no such thing as acting anymore, by and large. There are a few people who are exceptionally good actors, but they're very few and far between. Most of them are in either the White House or in Congress. But you're not going to find them on Sunset Boulevard anymore. What do they need that for? There's no power in that. You've got to make a fool of yourself. So here we are. 1-800-449-8255. Here in San Francisco, there was big changes in the radio business. The once powerful talk station has now been altered to nothing but all no news, an all no news station with one holdover in a Hawaiian shirt they couldn't get rid of because it's contract. But could you imagine that this was the leading talk station in America, the number one billing talk station in America, and a new owner took it over, new ownership, and they closed down a talk station. So now all of the guys, could you imagine these guys who had it for years so good, and they're now out of business? Can you imagine? There was a guy who had a talk show. He was a nice guy, liberal guy, and on the weekend he did a food show. You know, can you imagine him going in the same restaurants where he got free meals, walking in the next day, they make him pay? Is liable to kill him off altogether. He was hanging by a thread to begin with. But could you imagine what happened to these guys who why, yes, I'm on cage, blah, 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 blah. The next day they have to pay for their own meal. I can't imagine it. But as I say, it's a changing business, and I know it. I actually am a guy who loves crises. I've always thrived in crises. I love it. I love a changing radio landscape because I know I'll thrive. If anybody survives the changing times in radio, you're listening to him. Nobody has a better ear for what's happening than me, and no one knows how to alter what I'm doing better than me. No one can do what they're doing or have been doing and survive in radio. Nobody. Everything is changing. Not only the ownership, but the listenership is changing. People's listening habits are totally different. Totally different. Everyone's got, you know, oh, there's always going to be the hardcore who cares about America and cares about China and cares about Russia and Iran. Absolutely. But if that's all you do all day long, forget about it. You may as well go to work in a gun store. Now, I have nothing against gun stores, but there's a big difference between being a national talk show host and working in a gun store. You see what I'm saying? I mean, I own guns. Don't give me like the, I own guns. I personally love guns. I don't quite worship them yet. I don't clean them in the basement with like mad eyes. But I do, you know what I'm saying. It was a metaphor. So what do you think about Romney dropping out, not going to go to the Trump thing? That's a very, very interesting discussion, by the way. Very interesting thing for Romney to say no. Maybe there's hope for Romney yet. He's showing spine in some way. Maybe his advisors are not out to destroy him altogether. I mean, as I thought, you know, tomorrow they could be working for Obama and Axelrod. See, after they, could you imagine what a reward there would be for the campaign advisors who are shafting Romney? Unlimited horizons working for the Axelrod machine after this. And the people who just destroyed Cain, who worked for him, his advisors, and where are they today? Could you imagine them the next day after Cain withdrew? Where's Cain today? He can't even get his old job back in Atlanta on the radio. I'm sorry. It's awful. I would never have him on again. No, not that he did anything so bad, you know. But here's the point. Now that he's no longer a candidate, who is he? The guy had a radio show. That's all he ever had. And we know about the pizza thing, but he was only a night radio host on a station I was on, and he followed me. Half of the shtick that he had came from my show, by the way. Half of the things he said, I didn't invent 999 because it made no sense. It made no sense at all. But other than that, almost everything else he said came from my show because he listened to me for so many years before he went on the air. I was like his show prep. Tyler, Texas. I just flew over Tyler, Texas. I saw it on the screen that they have, like the air show. I love air show. I can watch it for 6 hours. I never tire of air show on a plane. It shows you like time of departure, time and destination, time flown, time till arrival, wind speed. You know which one of the instruments doesn't, I don't like it at all. I'm a boater, so I'm used to movement. But with a boat, you can see a horizon better than you can on a plane, right? I'm sitting in a plane, I'm doing well, but when I watch the altimeter, and it's going up and down by 110 feet all the time, like up, down, up, down, up, down. That's what freaked me out. That's got me a little shaken up. I had no idea the plane was actually going up and down by 100 feet, 100, 110, plus 100, plus 90, 80. You're like on a roller coaster in that little tube, the cigar in the sky. And I don't drink anymore in an airplane. You see, in the early days, I knew how to fly. Those were great days of flying. I remember I'd fly to New York from New York when I was a younger guy and had a young family, and I was Willie Loman peddling books to publishers who didn't buy them. Nah, they did once in a while. It was the hardest time of my life going into publishers in New York with a book proposal and having to meet one of those dim-witted women who would listen to you only to say no. Oh, they would take you to the drink or the lunch. And then you'd be alone stranded on 8th Avenue in Manhattan in a telephone booth. You had to call your wife and tell her, I don't think so, or I did think so. And then you had a nightmarish night ahead of you in a hotel room till you visited the next idiot publisher. They're all gone, by the way. I'm a raging bull of a success now. Even then, I mean, I did well, okay, but not like today. I mean, the health books did well. These are astronomical. If I had ever had a health book that did as well as Abuse of Power, I would have been a different person. So God didn't want the health books to sell that well. They sell okay to keep me going, but not as well as the political books are doing, you know. And the novel, who would have expected that Abuse of Power to do so well? So what I'm saying is in those days, I'd fly from Sanford SFO to JFK, right? And you get in, it was such a horrible in the meeting, and then make your way. And of course, they, you know, like madmen, they had to make your way to the ante room. And then you go into the little office, because I never could see the editor-in-chief. It was always, you know, associate editor, usually not an assistant associate because I had a few things in. And they were polite enough, you know, da 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 da. 9 out of 10, they stole my proposal and gave it to someone they knew. I'd always see my book come out under someone else's name. I swear to God, it happened over and over again. But they take it to the publisher's lunch, and it's very hard to control yourself when you're a writer, when you go to a publisher's lunch, from not making a complete ass of yourself. Because you don't know who to play, you know what I'm saying? You don't know what part to play. Now, if you're selling a nonfiction book, you can't play Dostoevsky and be too petulant and withdrawn with curly hair and dark eyes with cigarettes. So then you're selling health books, so you can't do that at all. On the other hand, if you're too straight, they'll think that the book's not going to be creative enough. So now you have to tamp it down a little bit with a little a little bit of the debonair. You know, so you have to throw in a little wildness from San Francisco to show that you're a little on the edge. And da-da-da. It's very interesting because all the world's a stage, my friends. Never forget that. I don't care who you are, where you are, how you are. In fact, remember this because you heard it first and you're never going to hear this again except from the first person who steals it from me tomorrow. We are living in such a crazy age where things are changing so rapidly that people who are now dying are asking the doctor, please wait, can I send my last email? I mean, it's crazy. They're asking for their BlackBerry to send one more email from a deathbed. I'm surprised that you didn't know this. This is what's happening. Wait, I got to tweet one more thing. I am dying now. It's a horrendous experience. And that's it. The last tweet was, I'm dying in the cutoff. Everybody wants to get in their last tweet because that's why no one's talking anymore. There's no priests. There's no rabbis at the deathbed. There's no one there but a BlackBerry or whatever, an iPhone. Okay, they're at an iPhone. I'm sorry, I was a year out of date, 2 years out of date. The only thing that they want next to their deathbed now is an iPhone. Keep the priest, send me an iPhone. I want it photographed and put up on YouTube. I want my death put up on YouTube. That's how sick this is. My God, you've seen internet porn proliferate, right? How about internet death proliferating where people are suddenly going to start posting their deaths? I've got it. There's your next billion-dollar idea. You send around cameramen to no, what do you need cameramen for? Just tell them to post it on death.com. I don't know what to say. What do you want from me? What do you want? My dog was sick. I thank God he's okay because I really was afraid. I don't know what I'm going to do in this one. He's young. Okay, seven. Don't even think about it. Don't even think about it. I don't know. I can't replace him. We got another dog. I don't like him. No, can't relate to him. I can't, this may be the last dog. I can't go through it again. I can't do it. I can't. How can you get to love something so much and then lose it again and again and again? But as someone who's wiser than me said, Mommy, why do our dogs and cats die before we do? Said the child. And Mommy said, Son, it's the way God set it up. Because if we preceded them to the next world, why they'd be left alone to fend for themselves. And the little boy went along happily ever after that, voting for Obama and eating his Cheerios. Tyler, Texas, I just flew over, I said, when I got distracted by my own mind. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Leslie, what's on your mind?
Well, the first thing that's on my mind is you are giving me the best laughs I've had in a long time tonight with your Christmas music playing to soothe everyone and your comments about that. It's just, I'm laughing my head off as I'm driving.
Well, so in other words, you understand the cynicism and sarcasm is necessary in order to get through a day today.
Absolutely. My dad was a cynic and a sarcastic man, so absolutely. And I have a little bit of that in me as well. So hilarious. Thank you very much.
You know, this is an important conversation we're having, Leslie, because cynicism and sarcasm is misunderstood as negativity in this overly optimistic, absurd world that we live in. But cynicism and sarcasm is a method of approaching life, is it not?
Absolutely.
It's worked for me. I mean, look how well I've done being a cynic and a sarcastic individual.
And my dad did as well. I think people really appreciated my father because he never had to wonder about what he was thinking.
There you go. No one likes me. Don't get me wrong. I don't have a friend in the world, but so I don't really care. That's their loss.
Absolutely. Well, and the second thing I talked about is...
No, you know, Leslie, you know, children have friends. Adults don't.
You're
adults
right.
Really don't have friends. They may think they have friends, but I don't think they do. I think they have people who may have mutual need with each other, but the concept of a friend, does that really exist in this country anymore?
Well, I think I have good friends. I think that I do, but once again, we all...
Yeah, but you're from Texas. You people are in a different class. In Texas, maybe people can still like each other. Maybe I've been living in California too long. I don't really know.
Well, the second reason I called is that I am a mother of 3-year-old triplets, and I am absolutely terrified about where the country is going. And it's absolutely it's refreshing to listen to you because for a long time I thought, maybe I'm nuts. Am I the only one that can't understand how...
No, it's a mother's protective instinct about where Obama is leading us that you're feeling. There's no question about it. If the man wins 4 more years, in my estimation, the tyranny that we have seen, and I can elucidate it for you, chapter and verse, I can't do it in 1 minute. If this man gains power again, and that Chicago mob gains power over us again, I do not think liberty will survive.
I agree.
And Leslie, I am not the only one who thinks this way. I increasingly meet individuals, ex-cops, ex-military, current cops, current military, who see the world exactly the way I do. I know I'm not alone in this. The problem is most Americans are so blasé about things, they don't want to hear it. They have their head in the sand. And they don't understand what happens to nations where most people put their heads in the sand.
Especially living in the South, people sometimes don't want to have conversations about these things because, God forbid, you offend someone. And so, you know, you kind of walk around thinking, okay, I must be the only one that sees that life as we know it.
No. But that's, see, that's the value of talk radio. And I got to take a quick break. But listen, the value of talk radio, for those of you who don't understand it, is to give voice to the millions of people who are thinking these things or worrying about these things and have nowhere to go with them. You understand how important we really are? We are a safety valve for this society. In fact, the government should reward us as national treasures because we're the only thing between them and mayhem. We're the only thing between the people's fears and mayhem. I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power. I'll be right back.
Savage.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that?
All right, everybody, it's Michael Savage with Christmas music to make you happy.
I do hope that.
And here's a cheerful, happy song for all of you pet lovers out there.
I must take a trip.
Thank you, honey.
You can
take a break now. Go take a hydration break. World's oldest dog dies at age 26. Pusuki, listed by the Guinness Book of World Records as the world's oldest living dog, died in Japan on Monday. He was 26 years old. There is no official method for converting dog years to human years, but they think it was somewhere between 117 and 185 in human years. The dog's owner, Yumiko Shinohara, said the male crossbreed died at Sakura, north of Tokyo. Pusuki was reportedly eating well and staying active until Monday when he lost his appetite and had difficulty breathing. Pusuki died peacefully minutes after his owner returned home from a walk. The owner said, I think Pusuki waited for me to come home, according to the reporter. Born in April of 1985, Pusuki was recognized last December as the world's oldest living dog. The oldest known dog on record, according to Guinness, was an Australian cattle dog named Bluey, who lived to the ripe old age of 29 years and 5 months before it was put down in November of 1939. And now back to a little Christmas music. Right here on the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. A little Christmas music right here on the Savage Nation. A little Christmas music right here on the Savage
really
Nation.
But baby, it's cold.
A little
outside.
Christmas music.
I've got to go away.
But baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has
been hoping that you'd
so
drop in.
So very nice.
I'll hold your hands. They're just like
my
ice.
Mother will start to
beautiful.
No, listen to this. It's happy music, right? It's an America that doesn't exist. It probably never existed. According to the verminous left, this never existed. He was gay. She was a lesbian. They were molesting their daughters. They were molesting their nieces. The priest was molesting the children. The other priest ran off to Costa Rica with the till. The teacher was sick. The other was a drunk. There was never an American. There was all a fantasy. And today it's even better than it was then because everyone's so upfront and everyone's out there. And everyone tells you exactly what they ate for lunch and let it all hang out. Sure, it's a better country. It was always as polluted. In fact, it was much worse. We're only seeing it all now because everyone's so honest. That's the liberal view. I don't believe a word of it. I think times were a lot better, frankly, a long time ago. And I think that unless we turn things around, we're finished. We're finished. A dead world. Think of men without souls. Think of snowmen with clothing.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
questions for the Savage Nation today are all over the map. The biggest story today is, God only knows where we begin, it's the shooting down of our stealth drone, or the falling down of our stealth drone in Iran. And I'm asking, why did this happen? Why is the media covering it up? Do you believe we've been seriously compromised by the loss of a drone to Iran? Do you believe our military technology has already been compromised as a result of this? Was it on purpose, by accident? And what do you believe is the biggest threat to the security of our military technology? We're also talking about the biggest freeloader in your life. Well, who was the biggest freeloader in your life, in your family or amongst your friends? How did they get away with their behavior? And what's your worst mooch horror story? What's the largest gift you've ever given a mooch or a moocher? And what's the best method you found for getting rid of a moocher in your life? That's the real question. How do you get rid of these bums? In the sound department, wow, we were talking about the release of the assassin, the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan was by Hinckley. Now they want to release him. The doctors are saying that Hinckley is now sane. Really? He may be sane, but he tried to kill a president. Old Ron Paul, the lunatic, supports the bums in the street of the Occupy Wall Street movement. Newt Gingrich gives another press conference. Newt Gingrich comments on why he's going to be part of the Donald Trump debate. Oh, my God. Obama on Christ. Let's let that one go. CNN runs an interview where they interview Obama's brain, Axelrod. That's good sound that we've had today. Now let's go to MichaelSavage.com for astounding stories. Moonbeam, the governor of California, there he goes again. He's telling the people in the state of California, please raise taxes on yourself. There is a reason that he was known as Moonbeam. There is a Moonbeam. There's a reason for it. The fact of the matter is he was put in power by the powerful teachers' unions, the Service Employee International Union, and they, of course they love the gravy train. And now he's putting forward a ballot initiative to raise taxes. More state taxes, 2% more, on top of the 10 or 11% that the top income earners are already paying. That's a 20% raise in state taxes. Can you believe this? Now, you could cut California's budget by eliminating benefits to illegal aliens, as I've said for well over 15 years, but hey, why tax the least productive members of society when you can tax the most productive members and drive them out of the state altogether? Isn't that how a moonbeam thinks? Speaking of moons and beams, top story on MichaelSavage.com, Bill Clinton tied to Corzine in big cover-up. That's right. As MF Global collapsed, Clinton's firm was raking in huge fees for public relations and advice. I wonder what they got for the money. First printing almost gone of Abuse of Power, buy it for the holidays while copies last. Why a Newt Gingrich candidacy would doom the Tea Party. Charges of pedophilia in Hollywood, just the tip of the iceberg. Pedophilia in Hollywood? Astonishing. I would never have expected that. I can't believe that people with a lack of morals would work in Hollywood. That's astounding. North Korea making missile able to hit U.S. Oh, really? Well, maybe Madeleine Albright should go over for another banquet. Maybe that will curb their enthusiasm. Chief of federal drone program targeted an ethics inquiry. Really? Someone who works for the Department of Homeland Security has an ethical problem? I can't believe that. Seattle welfare recipient lives in a million-dollar home. Couple travels around the world to exotic places. They live in a million-dollar home, but they're on welfare. Really? Well, that's the American way. 55 killed in suicide attacks on Shiites in Afghanistan. Terrible what's going on over there. United Kingdom permits 3,000 Muslim honor attacks on Muslim women. None of the Muslim men were thrown out of the country, yet I, Michael Savage, am still banned in Britain. Listen, I'm still banned in Britain. If you care anything about it, it's free. You can get my newsletter by going to michaelsavage.com. It's a free newsletter. It's an interesting story here. Lady Junk Junk to discuss anti-bullying at White House. That's the world's most important problem, bullying.
The reason that they're passing all of these voter suppression laws around the country is because of so-called rampant voter fraud. To then hypocritically abolish this commission or attempt to abolish the commission is just the height of hypocrisy. It's very transparent who they're trying to block from the polls and who they want to smooth the path for. The big issue is that you have about 11% of Americans that don't have a photo ID. And then for certain populations like African Americans, Hispanics, seniors, low-income folks, they are even less likely more likely to not have a photo ID. 25% of African Americans in this country don't have a photo ID. And it isn't necessary. It's just an obstacle in the path of getting someone to the polls. What they're doing is trying to make sure that because they can't win an election on the merits, they're trying to rig these elections by ensuring the people who will go to the polls and vote for Democrats can't get there.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Savage reads from Abuse of Power. Model horrifically injured walking into the propeller of a plane. It's a horrible story. Muslim girl gang freed because they weren't used to being drunk in England. They were not used to being drunk. They got drunk and they attacked people. I can't even follow the insanity of England. Could notorious L.A. gang leader Big Evil go free? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a new world order. Patriots need not apply. All this and more on MichaelSavage.com. Now, for more news, let's go back to MichaelSavage.com. I'll read you three more headlines. Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Obama says the internet is responsible for job losses in America. He says he's in Texas when he was in Kansas. Of course, if you're from Indonesia, it's hard to tell a difference. The leader of China, Mr. Hu, urges the Chinese Navy to prepare for combat. And our idiots in the Navy say, well, we're not looking for a scrap. They're entitled to develop their own defensive posture. You hear this? What's going on? While North Korea is making missiles capable of hitting the U.S. of A, the U.S. is going to weigh gay rights and foreign aid. It goes on and on. It gets worse by the day. But that's what you get when you see trickle-down tyranny hitting America. I'll be right back right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Look at all of these political topics we've been talking about and how I have now skipped a beat and fallen into my old stories. Pictures are falling out from 20, 25 years ago that have something to do with politics, and I have to bring one of them up now. I must tell you, I just brought a lot of them into the studio, and we'll get back to the politics as usual in a minute. Here is a statue, a sculpture that I've carried in my mental faculties, in my mental valise my whole life. I'll never forget it as long as I live. It was in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It's still there. It's white marble, and it's by Carpeaux, who was a French artist, 1827 to 1875, and he did this thing called Uglione and His Sons. What is it? It's from the Divine Comedy, and it shows a former count who made one mistake, Uglione della Gherardexa. I don't know if that's exactly right. But it shows his sons and his grandsons all naked and dying of starvation because of something he did to insult the count in his time. He was, a high-flying aristocrat. And then he did something to fall out of favor with the power structure. And this sculpting shows him gnawing at his own cheek, very gaunt, very thin, sitting nakedly on a stool. His son is holding on to his legs, looking up at his eyes. His grandson is begging him for some food, and they're all chained. Uglione and His Sons. If you're in New York City, if it's still there, it's astounding. So why did it strike me at the time, and what does it have to do with today's politics? Well, take a look at what just happened to Coach Paterno. The man has lost everything overnight. And it goes back to a religious precept that I shared with you on this show many years ago, where the ancient Jewish scribes wrote, one of them wrote, that a man could spend his entire life building up his reputation and with one mistake lose it all overnight. This is, I mean, what happened to Paterno is an example of what could happen to any of us at any moment. Nothing is assured. I don't care how rock solid your life is yesterday. We don't know what it's going to be tomorrow, right? Now, what is true for the individual is also true for the nation. And you know where I'm going to go with this. How one leader can make a nation or one leader can destroy a nation. How one leader can save a platoon under fire in combat, and one leader can run from the fire and the whole platoon can be wiped out. How an officer in the most horrible districts of the worst city in America, in the narcotics division, can have a partner that's rock solid that'll be his back, and they can get through a firefight. Or you can get somebody put in there for political reasons who'll turn her back or his back and leave you stranded, and you wind up with a bullet in your face. So as I say to you, you know, there's politics in a flea. But for me, Ugolino and his sons is symbolic of what could happen to a man or a nation. An incredible piece of art. But this is what's so great about great art. Great art can be universal in almost any story. You can be entered into any story. I guess what I just said to you can be put into my next novel. Jack Hatfield's next adventures are being written as we speak. Because of the making of many books, there is no end. And life is finite. We have a short dance in the sun and it's over. And each night it becomes more apparent to me that the dance is coming to an end. When, we don't know. Does anyone listening to the show know? Does anyone listening to this show know when their end will be? Do you know? I don't know. So here we are again. I mean, there's a lot of this doom and gloom hanging over the horizon, personally and socially and economically and nationally. It's as though America is being taken apart by the day. I listen to these debates in part. I don't really listen to them in their totality. And I'm left limp because the moderators are all liberal moderators. They're all put up there by General Electric or CNN or one of the other front organizations for the government media complex, the New World Order, if you want to put it in that context. They never ask the real questions. Like a real question would be, what would you do to stop the flood of illegal immigrants in America? How would you make certain that only citizens vote in the next election? I mean, to me, that would be the first question. You got to ask yourself, why is it that the Democrats refuse to permit any state that passes a voter ID law to actually enact it? Because the Democrat Party is not a party of the American people. It's a party of the foreigner, the illegal foreigner at that. It's a party of the special interest, et cetera. Let's go down the line. The Democrats could never survive. You listen to me carefully. You listen to me carefully. If we had true voter ID in this country, it'd be true now in 2012. Obama would lose by 30 points because the real American would never vote for him again after seeing what he did to this country. Never. And so therefore they fight any state that tries to impose their own sovereignty upon their own affairs. They attack one estate after another that tries to pass voter ID. They come up with all cockamamie lawyer stuff that it will deter people from the polls. Of course it will deter people from the polls. Those who aren't citizens will be deterred from the polls as they should be. They should not only be deterred, they should be deported. So if what I'm saying to you is this, if the Democrats ever had to face the average American working class voter, they would lose by a landslide, the greatest loss in history. Why? Because the Republicans are so great? No, but because the Democrats are so bad. That's why. So to put it in the context of the only two parties we really have, irrespective of the fact that I'd like to see a real third party, which I will not see in my lifetime, this is the truth and the reality of it all, in my opinion. The Democrats, in other words, rely upon the illegal alien voter to swing the votes in the states that they know they could never win otherwise. Arizona, let's go to the callers. Arizona, Brad, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I've been listening to you on and off for about 3 years, and I find myself easily accepting the things that you talk about, but then sometimes I find myself just screaming at the radio that I don't understand what you're saying or I don't agree with it. Earlier you made a comment about police officers, and I myself, I'm a police officer, been so for about 4 years. You made some comments about how they themselves are much like the people they arrest, but they just control themselves.
Well, hold it. No. I didn't say that. What I said was they have to have the same degree of violence within themselves in order to face the truly violent. In other words, to take down a truly violent ex-con, you can't be Mr. Rogers or Mr. Peepers as a cop, can you?
No, not at all.
No, you have to be just as tough and just as mean is what I'm saying. But you are the Irish wolfhound as opposed to the wolf.
Gotcha. Okay.
You see? In other words, that was a compliment. I'm saying the real cop has to be courageous and tough to protect we the sheep.
Okay. All right. I agree with that. One thing I was thinking about, though, is I have arrested several child molesters. And during the investigation and the issues that I've come across through that time, I have felt myself being so angry to the point that I wanted to take justice in my own hands.
Oh, so you agree with me. I said, I don't know how anybody could be a cop. You arrest a child molester like this, what's going on, you'd want to kill him. You'd want to take him in a back room and break every bone in his body.
Exactly. And even cop killers. We had a cop killed in my area a couple years ago. And we caught the guy. It wasn't me, but my partners had to have some sergeants and lieutenants ride in the elevator with the guy just to make sure everything went okay.
I'm going to show you a story that is probably one of the greatest travesties of justice in your lifetime, and it's going on right now. I want you to go to michaelsavage.com, and there's a story that you must, before it's dropped. There's a Border Patrol agent who arrested a marijuana smuggler, a known smuggler. He had been arrested several times. This Border Patrol agent, who was a Hispanic, by the way, arrested this dope smuggler who fought with him, and he pinned the guy's arms behind his back. Okay, the Border Patrol agent. They took the Border Patrol agent to jail, to a court, and he lost the battle. They said that he brutalized the marijuana smuggler.
Savage. Frosty the Snowman was a jolly happy soul, with a corncob pipe and a button nose and two eyes made out of coal.
Well, look, many of us believe that this is the most corrupt, incompetent administration in American history. But let's ask ourselves this. What are Obama's most extreme constitutional violations, okay? Joining us right now on the Savage Nation to talk about this is Ilya Shapiro, a senior fellow in constitutional studies at the Cato Institute. Ilya Shapiro, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you. Good to be back again.
In your opinion, what is President Obama's biggest constitutional violation or violation of the Constitution?
Well, it's got to be the individual mandate, the requirement in Obamacare that everybody buy a health insurance policy. And this is quite literally unprecedented. Never in the history of the Republic has Congress required people to buy a particular product. If you think about it, during the Civil War, the New Deal, the Great Depression, the World War II, if they had this tool in their arsenal, they could have gotten people to buy war bonds or buy particular agricultural products to support farmers or any number of things, but they didn't. This is the first time this is being attempted. And they're claiming that it's part of regulating interstate commerce, the so-called Commerce Clause in the Constitution. But that would seem to have it backwards. They're requiring people to engage in commerce rather than regulating existing economic activity.
Surely Obama is capable of understanding the consequences of what he's doing to the U.S. Constitution. Why is he doing it?
Well, he's a pretty smart guy, and he taught at the University of Chicago Law School, which is my alma mater. I didn't have a class with him. I know friends did, and he's a sharp guy. He knows what the Constitution is. But two things: he has a very different view of it than we libertarians at the Cato Institute, much broader view of federal power. But also, he doesn't care so much about kind of the niceties of the law. I think he wants to improve the country and improve public policy in certain ways, certain vision that he has, and you backfill the legal stuff later.
You write that the administration and Congress have perpetrated mob-like actions. Mob-like actions. Can you explain what you mean?
Well, the reason why we care about the Constitution is because that's where the government gets its power to do things, and sometimes to put people in jail, or even to execute them, depending on certain things that they have done. If the government starts doing things that that is not justified by under the Constitution, then it's exercising power no different from an armed mob that just seizes power at the point of a gun. All of these nice structural provisions, federalism, separation of powers, checks and balances that we learned about in grade school, aren't there simply James Madison showing off how well he knows political theory, but ultimately are to protect individuals and protect individual liberty from the government that the document has created.
Now, what damage has Obama done to this country?
Well, it's he's standing on the shoulders of giants, as it were, or pygmies, depending on how you characterize them, in terms of many administrations, many governments, Congresses, going back to the Progressive Era and the New Deal that have little by little, sometimes in leaps, sometimes in spurts, expanded the power of federal government. We thought George Bush was a big government conservative, as it were, expanding government more than anyone since LBJ. Well, Obama has topped him, and that's just from a policy perspective in terms of expanding the budget and so forth. From a constitutional perspective, Obamacare really is revolutionary in that sense. If it's allowed to stand, then any future national reform or regulatory program that Congress wants to put in, they'll know that they can just require people to buy that industry's products, for example. What better way to bail out, the auto industry, say, than to require that everybody buy a Chevy? Or with Dodd-Frank, another thing that I list on my top 10, reforming, so-called reforming the investment area and financial institutions by creating these independent, unaccountable, unelected agencies that are their own, create their own law, execute it, enforce it, and interpret it. Creating whole new bodies of branches of government. Really, the contempt shown to the courts and to the judicial system, and things like the ad hoc, arbitrary moratorium on drilling after the Deepwater Horizon explosion. I mean, there's just a whole number of things. It was really hard to boil down this into a top 10 list. And, every president commits, or a lot of them at least, have committed unconstitutional acts. But it seems that here, with the expansive powers for the executive and for the administrative state on top of Congress's typical power grabs, this really is it's a brave new world that we're in.
You only give 10 of his top constitutional violations. What are some of the biggest violations that you didn't write about?
One is just coming up last week, the defense authorization. There's some language in there that allows warrantless detentions of people just as long as the administration or the executive, the relevant prosecutor, says that they're a terrorist risk. Any number of things on the civil liberties area. There are problems with the Patriot Act, even as it's been amended. Some of my colleagues have issues in the foreign policy arena, and indeed kind of the machinations to try to comply with the War Powers Act to justify the invasion in Libya. Now, I don't think the War Powers Act itself is constitutional, but calling that kinetic activity rather than war, that's just ludicrous. It's an indication of how the administration plays fast and loose. Another thing that recently came out was the advice to educational institutions, K-12 and universities, about how to essentially avoid the Supreme Court's rulings on what is permissible affirmative action, permissible use of race, and impermissible, essentially trying to allow racial discrimination in through the back door, changing the burdens of proof in higher education of how people are adjudicated when there's claims of harassment or discrimination by really severe punishments without the full protections of due process. So there's in a host of areas, some of which are more friendly to the conservatives talk about a lot, some of which that liberals talk about a lot, all of them I think libertarians talk about a lot. But there's just the overarching theme is that it's ever larger control by the federal government and all elements of it, the Congress, the administrative agencies, the White House itself, the different cabinet agencies, intruding into ever more parts of our lives, our economies, prerogatives that are duly reserved to the states or indeed that are left to the individuals to figure out for themselves. And actually, one other thing that didn't make my list is the administration's treatment of the various state immigration-related legislation. Now, I generally don't agree with it as a matter of policy. The Arizona SB 1070, the Alabama law, the Georgia law, they've done it in different ways. Utah kind of does it in a separate way, having their own guest worker program on top of the extra enforcement. Now, I think that these sorts of pieces of legislation, while understandable because Congress has fallen down on the job and not offering a comprehensive solution to our dysfunctional immigration system, I think it is bad as a matter of policy. It drives people away from the economies of these respective states, etc. But as a matter of constitutional law, the states are just tracking federal law without creating, you know, a new system of green cards or citizenship requirements for that particular state, because that truly is left to the federal government. So I think it's very cute that the Department of Justice is going after the states rather than the federal government focusing on making actual immigration reforms that are within the federal government's power. So here again is an example of the government cracking down on states, not in the sense of assuming states' powers, but getting involved where states are actually duly acting in areas where they're allowed to.
Ilya Shapiro, very worrisome. Thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
It was great to talk to you, Michael, as always. If you want to learn more, our website, cato.org, and I have my own page there.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer.
Springfield, Illinois. Jason, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I think you're an intelligent man, but I think you're off the mark with this, with your view of the Wall Street protesters. And if you'll just give me a second, I can tell you why. You know, I don't think it's, no one's upset that people are making money. You know, I'm a huge sports fan. The athletes I like make tons of money, and I don't begrudge them for that. The problem is when people make money off the backs of people and then turn around and screw those people. And, for example, my parents worked in a factory for 30 years, worked their butts off to give me and my brother a good life, and all they got in return was the factory got closed on them because they knew they could go to South Carolina and pay some redneck half the money. And they would do it.
Wait. So who's responsible for the factory being closed?
The owners of the factory, who were running a very profitable business.
All right. So what does sitting in Zucchini Park have to do with the owners of the factory closing the factory?
Because I don't think people are upset with Wall Street per se. That's just become a target. I think they're upset with the collusion of big money and government, who are only advocating the interest of the wealthy. Everyone else is getting left
and what
out.
What would your prescription be for a healthier economy?
I would undo Citizens United. I would reinstate Glass-Steagall. I would set limits, caps on how much more a CEO can make than their employees. They used to make 30 times more. Now they make over 400 times
and
more.
And would that apply to a privately held company as well?
Yes.
Why?
There's only so much.
You mean a man builds a business and you should tell him how much money he can take?
No, he's entitled to make, just because a business has a right to do something doesn't mean it's the right thing to do.
Yes, Sieg Heil in the new socialist Germany. There should be limitations on the speculators.
So what should the person...
Do you understand that you have become a fascist? Don't you understand that no matter how well-intentioned you are, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, that you yourself are now espousing socialist Marxist doctrine that was employed in the ex-Soviet Union? Don't you understand that?
Isn't calling for protesters to be locked up, isn't that sort of fascist?
Wait a minute. Don't turn the argument. You're telling me that a private individual who kills himself to build a business should have a limitation on how much he could earn because you're jealous of him?
Okay, all right, and you have a good point. I do not deny that. But the flip side of that is, what is the factory worker or the employee to do when they do what they're supposed to do and they work hard? And because that owner decides, even though he's already...
And what is the white male supposed to do when he kills himself to get two master's degrees and a PhD, and when he comes out, they tell him they're only hiring minorities and women and illegal aliens? Go look for another job. You'll have to put your life on hold because the ACLU has passed affirmative action. What should I have done? Blow up the university?
No, but you have every right to be angry, just as a person.
I was very angry, but I didn't go sit in Zucchini Park. I was bitterly angry, but I found another way to make a living. I didn't expect anyone to give me a handout. Let me give you a tip, because otherwise you're going to go down the wrong road and you're going to waste your own precious life. You come from hardworking people. That means you have a work ethic in yourself. There was once, I never forget when I went through this bad phase, a horrible black phase when my life was taken from me by the ACLU. I could have gone off the rails, believe me. I was this close to losing it all. I was this close with two young children. I had no hope, no future. It was absolutely abysmal. There was no jobs for me. And I was laughed at by the white male liberals who were running the universities. And the reason they hired minorities and women is because there was no competition for them that way. Let me lay it on the line for you. Because I know what those white male professors did. They were forced to retire, and then they gave themselves jobs again after they retired as consultants under full pay. I know how the university system was rigged by these white liberal professors who told me to drop dead after they gulled me into the PhD. But let me keep going here. You're a hardworking man. So here's a story I heard when I was in the down and out phase. A woman was sitting on a park bench, and someone overheard her talking to a man who was depressed, and he said, "The world owes me a living. I did so much, they owe me a living." The woman quietly said to him, "Yes, the world owes you a living, but you have to go out and find it. I'm telling you, that could turn your life around. Otherwise, you're going to walk around with embitterment, and you know what? At the end of the day, you're not going to get anything from any of this. No matter how much you scream and cry, do you actually think you're going to change the system by sitting in a dirty park with a bunch of idiots who are just living off the land?"
No, I agree. That's not going to do anything. I think the problem is that the ordinary person doesn't know what they can do, because used to we could turn to our representatives for some help.
There are no representatives. They're all lobbyists. They're a government of the lobbyists, by the lobbyists, and for the lobbyists. We have lost our participatory democracy. You can join a Tea Party. That's what you can do. We effected change. We have the government scared to death of us. You have to understand something, that the government is using these mobs, these union-controlled mobs, in order to fight the Tea Party. I've watched this unfold. And this started with the Black Caucus attacking the Tea Party viciously, making up stories. Then the unions attacked the Tea Party. Remember Hoffa Jr., what he was calling them, the names? That was the second volley. The third volley are the gutter rats in the parks, unleashed by David Axelrod and the community organizers that he is working with. It's all an attempt to nullify the Tea Party, neutralize them, and make sure that Obama gets reelected. Not one dime will ever go in your pocket from any of this protesting, Jason. That's the absolute truth. We can argue this from today until tomorrow. At the end of the day, you have to find a way to make your own living. They're not going to give anything to you. Do you think the government's going to come down and give you something?
No, and I don't want them to, but I would also suspect that a lot of the Tea Partiers' complaints aren't all that different than the Wall Street protesters, and they're being divided by the rich.
Now you're getting closer to the truth. Some of the rhetoric that is being heard from the more literate members of the protest movement mimics that of the Tea Party. They don't know who to blame. But I suggest they sit in around the White House. If a million people sat around the White House and started to chant, "No more graft, no more corruption. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Obama has got to go. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Obama has got to go." Wait till a million people sit around the White House and we'll see whether or not the corruption and the graft comes to an end.
You're right. I agree.
But listen, to attack the private individual is exactly the wrong decision, Jason. First of all, it's not going to yield what you want. Are you working right now?
I am. I don't know that it's any necessarily a private individual. You know, Mitt Romney made the comment that corporations are persons, and I think that rubs people the wrong way, because these persons are able to take their jobs overseas, bring their money back home.
Well, but let's pause for a minute. Most corporations in America are businesses that are S-corporations. They're not the mega giant international multinational corporations like Exxon, like General Electric. A family-run business here in America pays taxes as an S corporation and pays approximately 35% of their income as a corporation in taxes. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
See, most people don't know anything. And then the individual who runs it takes his profit or her profit, and then he pays the regular federal and state income taxes on top of that. They're taxed to death. But corporations like General Electric pay no taxes. That's where the target of the wrath ought to be. Now, you got to ask yourself, with all of this wrath going on there, why is no one talking about General Electric not paying any U.S. income tax? I would think that would be an easy target, wouldn't you?
Well, except that they run NBC, and NBC...
You know, all right, so you are an educated man. You do know what's going on here. You do know that Jeffrey Immelt wisely bought NBC a long time ago so he could control a part of the dialogue, which never should have been permitted. The interlocking corporate directorships are killing free speech in America. The very thing that the left of the 1960s warned us about has come to pass from the American left today. You should never have permitted this interlocking corporate directorship to emerge where one man can sit on the board of General Electric, then sit on the board of NBC and MSNBC, and then maybe sit on the board of a pharmaceutical company, and then maybe sit on the board that appoints the scientist to the FDA, and then sits on a board that appoints the man to the FCC, and eventually you have a dictatorship of five individuals running the country. No, it's the interlocking corporate directorships that's another problem. And this was once a watchword of the American left. Of course, I've seen them co-opt their own movement.
Savage.